thank you so much for bringing that. I've really had this strong feeling in my heart to seize the opportunity every time there's a group gathering to do something like this, to really draw in these potent energies that I think are being showered upon the planet, not just today, but every day in various ways. And when we use a collective group to draw that in, it just seems like the blessings multiply in ways we can't possibly know. Thank you. So, as we go along and go through these questions that you've asked, by all means, if further questions arise as a result of the conversation that ensues, speak up. Don't wait. Just speak up. And I know there's a lot of wisdom in this group already. And so if you have something that you'd like to add, by all means, do so. The essential understanding in a dyad is that everything is welcome. And there's only one mind. There's only one of us in the room, even though it looks like many. So we're just having a conversation with ourselves in a dyad. Finding our way back into wholeness. So of course, whatever's over there is welcome as a pointer back to our original wholeness. So for me, I like to operate from that understanding when I see clients through my week. When a client's coming to the door, often my thought is, how am I going to show up now? Who am I now? How am I going to fall in love with me in this moment? Because that really seems to be what happens, is this beautiful falling in love. Sometimes it's not so quick, the falling in love. I might see more of my shadow than my light, but always I see myself. So if it's heartbreak or physical illness or relationship breakup or parenting, desperation, whatever it is, that's me. That's me over there. That's a part of me that wants to be whole again. So that kind of answers in part the first question, which was, how has your approach evolved in the past years? At first, that was really a theory, you know, an idea. Okay, this is me walking in the door. And I would make that conscious intent to experience the client as an expression of me. But wow, more and more over the years, I see how it's the absolute truth. And I feel so blessed that I get to feel more and more whole every day. The essence of the work that has not evolved, that has stayed really true, is this piece around welcoming, that everything's welcome. Even when at first there's like a cringe, oh my God, that's part of me. Oh, I don't like that part of me. well, that's reality, you know. We have preferences. That's the human experience. It's not personal to what's over there. It's not about them. It's about what's here and what I like and dislike in myself. So the essential components that have not changed, and I think that's just as important as what has evolved, is everything's welcome. What's up today? Locate, feel, describe. What's up today? Locate. Where is that in your body? Feel that. Can you describe it? And varying ways of saying that. It's all basically on there, which is the handout I gave you last time. You may have it, you may not. And I'm sorry, I don't think there's enough copies to go around for everybody. I wasn't sure how many were going to be here today. But maybe we can take a pee break shortly and Barbara can run off a couple more copies. Maybe those of you that are sitting close can share a copy. There's a new piece that's been showing up in my work that I'm really excited about. And it's showing up with incredible frequency. I never plan other than I always make notes with each client. And in my notes, I might, after the client's gone, I might say, I just sit with my notes to summarize. And I'll just ask myself, what's next? And just write down whatever idea comes. So that if the client books an appointment and they're happy to go with the flow and there's nothing apparently up for them, there it is in my notes, and it's congruent to the work that we did the last time I saw them. So I might follow on that thread, and that answers a further question, which was how do you keep it congruent from session to session? But this piece that's been showing up in these one-on-one dyads that I call yoga therapy, I'm trying to just frame it in an I-rest language. In the Vijnanamaya Kosha, we work with, we can use archetypal images, memories. We can take someone on a journey. And I often use that kosha quite a bit to apply a sort of therapeutic element to the dyad. And often, especially lately, and I don't know why, an inner child appears. Is it because it's May and the stars have aligned and it's time to clean up the inner child? I don't know. But there definitely seems to be a rhythm to things. I'll get a run on couples who want some dyading together. I'll get a run on parents who have problems with their kids. It just happens. So we're on a run with the inner child. And often I'll just hear it as a tone in the voice that sounds more like a little girl or a little boy. And I'll even say, you know, this sounds more like a child's voice. Does it sound that way to you? So I'm trying not to impose. I'm looking for their affirmation. Is that true? If they say no, I won't jump into it right away. But if they say yes, and most often they do, then I'll say, well, let's invite, little Claudia into the room? Did Claudia have a little girl name? How old would she be? Let's say 5. Did Claudia, at 5 years old, have a nickname? Did she?
Cloudy.
Okay, so little Cloudy. That's so sweet. And then we would proceed in a dialogue with little Cloudy. And so that's not so new, but I'm seeing it up a lot. The new piece is this calling in of wise Claudia. The Claudia that's all grown up, that has done a lot in her life, seen a lot of things, and has incredible wisdom in her. Because it's in everybody. It's in everybody. And you know the saying, you are the one you're looking for. You're the healer you're looking for. I can't tell you how I'm seeing this so strongly right now. That what feels like it's being called in almost as an archetype is giving up this idea that we have to go outside of ourselves to get the healing that we're looking for, the wholeness that we're looking for. And there's incredible wisdom right here in little Claudia and in wise Claudia. And there are times I might go out into the future, like 10 years down the road, and speak to wise Claudia who's got more wisdom than even now. And that seems to be quite effective, because there can be some doubt in people sometimes that, oh, I don't know the answers. I don't have that much wisdom. Even though I don't doubt, they might doubt. So this calling upon the wise self, that's a new piece. And the only other piece that seems different than before really is that I'm really trusting what comes up in the moment. I am just so trusting. You know, a little thought rolls through, and instead of just, you know, putting it back and coming back here, I trust that in this quality of presence, when, you know, when we're really with another and we've set an intention for this moment-to-moment unfolding, I so trust that what rolls through is right on track, and it's part of the field, part of the one mind, and I attend to it. And the more I absolutely trust it, the more pieces just are coming, and the client is like, wow, that is so right on. And it's, you know, no big deal, because it's just listening. It's just responding to the moment. The piece is, I still always check it out with the client. Is that true? I'm not sure. I try not to ever impose. So if there's some intuition or some insight that's rolling through, I'll check it out with the client. You know, I have clients that I've seen for a long time, and we have a really open relationship. There's a deep level of trust. And in those cases, I might not check it out, because I know there's just constant permission. But they know, too, that they're always welcome to say that doesn't feel right. But generally, and especially with a new client, I'll check it out.
I know when we were talking about these questions, one of the things Barbara raised, since I think referred to it, sort of was using her intuitions. And I think sometimes that sort of example we were talking about had to do with, or at least what sort of occurred to me was, you have an intuition that comes up that where you're actually trying to, you know, sort of fix somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a place you don't want to go, or do you, like, what do you do?
Such a good question. Such a great question. What do you do for a living?
So
Yeah. That's why I asked. Little Spidey Sense told me. Yes, and so in your training, in your conditioning, it is about fixing. Yeah. So it's a very important question for you in particular. But for everybody, because as yogis, which I think everybody in the room is a yogi, we use pranayama to fix. We use yoga poses to fix. You know, it's all about fixing in the yoga room. So we all can get very fixated on fixing. And the client has come to see you to get fixed. So it's a setup. And, you know, in part of the training, we're being taught to open to messiness, to open to the chaos, to open to, I have no idea where this is going. I'm just welcoming everything and saying, feel that. Where do you feel? Oh, feel that. Help. And sometimes these whispers that blow through come out of our conditioned training or neuroses to fix. So I think for me, and I guess we got to find the answer in ourselves, but for me, that's why I always check it out with the client. So for example, I had a client quite some time ago who we're doing our thing, locate, feel, describe, locate, feel, describe, locate, feel, describe in so many words. And I just kept seeing this wolf. I just kept seeing this wolf at her side. It was a gorgeous black wolf just sitting at her side. And, you know, I'm just, you know, keep putting it over there. What the hell is that? And then finally it just kept showing up, and I said, please forgive me. I just keep seeing this wolf. I don't know why it's here. Does it make any sense to you? Oh, well, the wolf is my ally. The wolf is a very important animal totem to me. And that segued the process, the unfolding in that direction. Well, so everything's welcome, and here's a wolf. Well, what is the wolf doing here? Just check in, ask with the wolf, and you know how it goes from there. And it just ended up being this beautiful unfolding. But I checked it out with her. I'm trying to think if there, you know, probably there has been a time where, you know, either I'm projecting my stuff onto my client and it's a whisper that's blowing through for me, but it's not for them. I think these are the times where we just have to go with the moment, you know, and that's the challenge. Our mind wants to know the fixed answer for every scenario, when actually this work is really calling us to be in the moment and see, feel, sense what the moment is asking for. When is this conditioning? Is this intuition? Is this an imposition? And, you know, usually within a few minutes, if we bring it into the room and welcome it, we're going to know whether it's on or off, whether it enhances the process or whether it stifles it. Does that answer your question? More or less?
Yeah, I would assume that over time, it's probably, it gets smoother in the sense mm-hmm. it's less
bumpy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the smoothness comes in the nervous system. You know, I think that at first the intuition kind of bumps its way into the room, announcing itself. But as we attune to it more deeply, it doesn't, you know, it's like a kid. Mom, 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 mom! You know, it has to keep turning up the volume to get our attention. But if we just catch the, oh, mother, your attention, please, and turn and listen, then, you know, the nervous system is refined and it, and the information flows through. That's what it feels like for me. It feels less bumpy. So somebody asked how to approach desensitization with a person with trauma. And what I see in my experience with clients with trauma is to really make use of the first three steps. Sankalpa, which includes the intention, inner resource, heartfelt desire. The Anamaya Kosha, body sensing. And the Pranamaya Kosha, breath sensing. As I watch clients over and over and over again, it's those first three steps that help drop them down into deeper brainwave states, an experience of openness and relaxation, where out of nervous arousal and into sense of calm and ease, and the inner resource is a felt sense. It's arrived and it's embodied. And I wouldn't proceed until I got that sense that there's some feeling quality of the inner resource alive in them.
So you wouldn't even progress to the locate, feel, describe until you have a sense of the sankalpa.
Yeah. Because we could be re-traumatizing them. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why they don't want to be in their body. And it's working very well for them to not be in it. So as we very gently invite them back in, and as they respond in their own time, by feeling the sensations in the mouth, by feeling the sensations in the fingers, etc., and they're in their own time, come back to embodiment to whatever degree that is, and there may be large parts of the body that they're not going to go near. But they dictate the pace, they dictate the readiness. And I just keep waiting for their readiness. And until that arrives, it's a fabulous meditation, sensory meditation.
So you would stay with that like over multiple sessions?
Yeah.
That's how long it
takes. Yeah.
And do you ask them for feedback if you're, say, doing a rotation of consciousness, moving through the body and
yes.
asking about the
yes.
sensation? So you're inquiring.
Yes.
Feedback.
Yeah, every once in a while I might say, how's that? How are you doing? Are you with me? For patients who have, you know, I'm thinking of one client right now who was sexually abused, physically abused, emotionally, she, you know, everything. We set out right at the start that everything is optional. We can stop and just have tea and conversation. We can go out for a walk. We can do whatever she needs for the hour. And, at the first few sessions, we're just developing a relationship. That's all that's happening. There's a sense of trust that's being cultivated. And I gave her a hand signal that showed, you know, okay, that's it. I'm done. But generally, somebody who's in trauma, my experience is, the eyes are going to open and it'll be very clear that whatever you're asking them to do is not doable in this moment. Is that your experience? Comes pretty clear that they're not able to feel, breathe deeply. It's pretty self-evident, hey? Yeah. also the most important thing in working with somebody with trauma, and honestly, I think everybody's been traumatized. I haven't met anybody that hasn't. Even if it's just, you know, losing mommy in the grocery store, it's traumatizing. To just wait for the cues, wait for the signs that they're ready. Yeah.
So, Anne, regarding that, I agree with you that every one of us has
mm-hmm.
had experiences of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really part of the protocol for a dyad to really step formally into the Sankalpa. So I'm just wondering, you know, like we can just go into body sense, you know, feel yourself, centering, grounding kind of thing. So I'm just wondering how you feel, or if you feel that, I guess what I'm saying is, so far it's been my sense that I need to start with everyone, not that I've got a huge number of clients with a Sankalpa, like really firmly established. Sometimes I wonder if I'm projecting my own need onto others, but I feel like, how can I go any further until I have some sense that they are able to feel in their body and start creating an inner resource? So is that part, I may be wrong, but my sense has been,
I think it's a great
like
assumption. I think it's a great assumption, and a safe assumption. You're creating safety. You're creating a safe container. So even though a dyad could jump right in, like you and I could easily jump right in to, what are you feeling right now? And where do you feel that? Could you describe it? But with a client, our student, they come, they knock on your door, and you say, why are you here today? What brings you here? That's the intention. So they're stating their intention. It may not be, you know, you're following the list, intention, heartfelt desire, inner resource. They're just saying why they're here. And then the inner resource is, you know, you have a nice, comfortable chair for them to sit in. Would you like a glass of water? There's a little box of Kleenex, close by, just in case. The room temperature is right. So you're setting the scene. Do you mind if I take notes? So you're asking, and it makes it, because you're asking, it's contributing to a sense of safety and trust. Everything that you're doing is evoking the inner resource.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm addressing your question here.
You're expanding it, so I appreciate that. So you're reminding me of that aspect of safety. And I guess what I'm also wondering is me looking for evidence that there's an internalized inner resource beginning to show itself.
Yes.
You know, at least always formally introducing that process, that concept.
Fabulous. Wonderful. It's a really nice way to start with your clients, to just ensure they have an inner resource in place. So how do you go about doing that?
Very traditionally within the IEST, I guess what I find, and maybe it occurs to me right now, maybe it's just as you say, we get coming to us what our own learning and needs are as well, you know, lots of opportunities. So I guess what I feel like I most often come across is people who are not embodied, that they don't really even necessarily know they're not embodied, what it is to be living in your body, feeling.
Yes.
And just, on a mind.
Yes, yes.
Just feeling. So,
yes. And some people can get there, and they can get there with relative ease, even though they haven't been embodied for a long time, perhaps. And some people, it takes a long time. It just takes a long time. And breath might be easier for them to enter in through sensing than body.
Okay.
Feeling the breath might be easier because it's subtler than the body.
Okay.
There was a further question down, further down about the inner resource. What if somebody, I think it was, what if somebody can't find an inner resource? You know, somebody who's suffered enormous trauma still looks up in the sky to see the stars and just spontaneously takes a deep breath and goes, wow. They look at the light when it hits the grass, when there's still dew on it, and they're in awe. So it's just finding, for them, is it in their relationships? Is it in nature? Some way, everybody's different. So just finding that doorway into calm, peace, ease, or just okay, as in nothing is going wrong. It appears right now. And for some people, that is the absolute best they can find. Nothing's wrong in this moment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A dialogue to begin to explore those. Okay, so, you know, would you be making a suggestion then, just as you did now, you know, oh, this dog is the, you know, how's that for you, or, you know.
Is there something in particular that evokes a sense of calm or ease, like looking at a beautiful painting or a favorite flower, or for you, maybe it's smell. Is it the smell of garlic and spaghetti sauce? Is it the hibiscus, or not hibiscus, they don't smell. It's just in Hawaii, the smell it right now. Those white flowers, starts with an M. Or frangipani, they smell gorgeous too. Everybody, you know, so just to find, and yes, you dropping ideas. Planting seeds.
So with embodiment, mentioning that, so I've never really found like sorrow is this place, this emotion is that place. It's more general. So does that likely mean a disembodiment or just a different way of?
No, it's just your way. That, and that's so important, that, you know, the mind likes to compartmentalize and then draw, make generalities. Everybody is so unique and different. And that yours is in a more general area. Somebody might be just, you know, like this one little very specific spot, and that's perfect for them.
Because, you know, many people think that their thoughts, you know, or their emotions, you know, that they think about their emotions is what's really happening. So when they're encouraged to drop into the body and to notice what they're feeling when they're experiencing that, it doesn't make sense to them.
It's such a great question. Some people, like vata dosha, vata constitution, there's a tendency to be more in the vijnana maya kosha, to live in that, a place of concepts, ideas, images, and that's where they live. Katha, the workhorse, is more embodied. Pitta is more embodied. Different constitutions live in different ways, through in different koshas. And so some people, you know, some people, when you say, feel that, and or where do you feel that? right away. So easy. And some people, story, memory, image, blah, blah, blah. Great, feel that. What? Is there a place where you feel that? All that you just said, is there a place where that resonates in the body?
No.
No. Exactly. No. Okay. Is there a place where that no resonates in the body? Can you feel when that no comes and it's stated, does it resound in the body anywhere? Great, feel that. Just feel that no in your body right now as a sensation. Thank you, Ian. So, but it's not always that easy.
Right.
It can, yes, you'll see it as a light. You'll see, I'm not saying you.
I said right.
Oh.
I agreed with you.
Right. Okay, thank you. More importantly, I'm right.
Yes.
Every answer will be some conceptual thing, and it can be confounding. But it's not wrong. It's just not wrong. It's what it is, and it's asking to be welcomed. So there can be two things going on. Such a great question, Barbara. One is some level of dissociation, and it's just really safe to live up here in the cerebral realm because I don't want to be here. There's scary shit here. Or they are a Vijnanamaya Kosha yogi. They swim in this realm, and it's their predominant sense through which they experience the world. And in as much as one has a left brain dominance over a right brain, or vice versa, we do want to look at the whole brain. In the same way, we want, while Vijnanamaya Kosha may be a dominance, we do want to work through all the koshas. And so part of what we're trying to do in the practice is to learn to swim in all the koshas. And most importantly, the body, because we are human beings with a body. And the body is a profoundly integrating apparatus. That's your number one answer. Embodied experience integrates and makes whole. It takes an idea. For example, somebody comes in with chronic SI joint pain, and they're swimming in their Vijnanamaya Kosha, and finally, in their own time, it's all perfect. Somehow there's a somatic experience. Where do you feel that? And there it is in the SI joint. And the light bulb goes off. Oh my God. Thought embodied. This driving, pushing, forcing is in my right glute and it's pushing forward. Or conversely, we go into the right glute, we feel the sensations around, we can feel the actual contraction in it. What does the right glute want to say right now? Does it have something to say? Stop pushing so hard. Stop driving me. I need a break. And there's no way they would have been able to get that swimming here. But just by going in and feeling the story, the issues in the tissues, it unpacks spontaneously just by feeling it. And a little gentle dialogue. So, you know, I would say, well, for some people, and I'm a Vata and I swim in Vijnanamaya Kosha, lots of profound insight through that sheath. 90% of the work with my clients is in the body because of that integrating force, because the body speaks to us in every moment. There's a conversation going on in every moment. And it's, you know, nothing short of miraculous. After 20 years of doing it, it's just absolutely miraculous. Just to watch it unfold, just by saying, locate, feel, describe, more or less. But the challenge for us as the facilitator is to not want to push it, to not get frustrated when, you know, so how does that feel? Well, it feels like the time when my mom, blah, 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 and then blah, blah, you know, and they're off into story again. And you'll get them down the body and then they'll quickly go back up into the head. So infinite patience, it's all unfolding perfectly, and keep asking somatic questions, but pay attention to what's rolling through, because this is their primary filter in life. And so there can be some great insights. And so what I always look for in when we're swimming in the Vijnanamaya Kosha is metaphor, archetypes. So I'm working with a client. She's tried everything. She's got incredible back pain. She's on major painkillers. They're talking surgery. Nothing has released it. It's gone on for 6 or 8 weeks. She was actually a friend, an associate. And, you know, I'm the woo-woo yoga lady in town. Oh, yeah, there Roseanne again. Some people keep an arm's length from me. So I just, in passing, said, listen, it's just an invitation. We could do a little dialogue with this part of your body. It's not going to hurt. It can only help. Worst case scenario, it's a waste of time. And you've committed to a half hour of dialogue. Best case scenario, some piece of information comes that helps your body feel better. So she, okay.
Is that the way you sort of preferred way for you for sort of dealing with their expectations about when they walk in the door? Maybe know nothing about this. I mean, I think that's, you work in a group like this, everybody kind of knows
yeah.
how this works.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with people that don't know how it works, mm-hmm. do you spend a lot of time explaining, like, what this is about, or do you
yeah.
just sort of sit down and do it?
It's such a great question. I kind of let the moment decide. Because, you know, some people need more information than others. Sometimes, I really do believe that if the mind is addressed at least somewhat, it'll relax a little bit. That's not always the case. It might have a total freak out. Just do it already! But, not too much information. We're just going to, it's very simple dialogue with the body. See what the body's trying to tell you through the symptoms. Really simple. And you know what, surprisingly? I don't know if there's been like a shift in consciousness, but in the last 3 years, everybody goes, yeah, they get it. You know, there must be enough yoga out there, enough body-centered stuff that, you know, in our Western culture anyways, everybody seems to know what I'm talking about. 5 years ago, it was still way out there for me. And, you know, that's the way it was received. Anyway, so this associate really simple conversation. Where do you feel the sensation? As you go into that, feel it and describe it. I feel if I come, it's red, it's hot. If I get too close, I'm going to get burned. Metaphor. If I get too close, I'm going to get burned. Simple question. Does that speak to some aspect of your life right now? Light went on. She recognized what was going on in her primary relationship. We had a simple dialogue about it. She walked out of the room standing tall, no longer bent over, walking, you know, really almost at a 45 degree angle. No surgery, no back problems.
No husband.
The relationship fell apart. She.
Oh, yes.
Maybe you know each other.
She's like, it can
Oh, dear.
So, and you, because the body integrates, do you try then and end every practice with a focus on the body?
Every step of the way, everything, almost everything that comes out of their mouth, I'll say, feel that. Everything to me is a precious gem of insight. They'll say, I see light. I'll say, great. Feel what that light feels like. They'll say,
would you say ask them where? Or they just, if they see light?
Maybe. They'll say, you know, we're talking to an inner child, and the inner child, what does the inner child need? She needs love. Feel that answer. Feel her asking for love. So it's like voices from the mystery speaking out, and every pearl, just an absolute gem. And as we feel it, it integrates in the body. That's the feeling to me. When they just fully meet that moment, it's done. It's so done. If they just think about it, and lots of people do that it's not cooked yet. It doesn't cook fully. But if we really receive the moment, when we are so present to a moment, just right here, the moment burns clean. There's no residue. There's no tension. Nothing. So here's this old past coming up, could have been stewing in there, putrefying for decades. And now this little 6-year-old is here saying, I need love. Feel that. Wow. You tell me. Can you feel without it being attached to the body? Okay, describe that to me. Is that okay? Is it okay to do that? There's no right or wrong here, by the way.
It's just all over. It's just grounded.
Okay.
But it isn't locatable.
Okay. So there's a feeling quality. It's just not like there. It's here.
So is it wrong?
Sorry, I missed that last thing you said.
It's here. So
Yes.
The mind isn't necessarily part of the body.
Yes.
So if I feel it in the brain,
yes.
The mind, again, it still isn't. Did you say if you're absolutely there, there has to be a whole connection? Down all the way.
I'm just asking myself, is that true? I don't know if that's the absolute truth, Marilyn.
Could I say
yeah.
So the brain as an organ located here
doesn't
feel. It's the connective nervous system, the pathways that lead to the, you know, the whole sensory motor that you interpret as feeling. So that's why they can do brain surgery with you.
Without.
You can go in. Hmm. You don't feel there. So I don't know if that's helpful.
But there are nerves in the in the head that where there are sensations.
It is the, you know, the center of the nervous
system. People can feel their arm when they don't have one.
Right. Right. Right.
Which brings up another whole aspect of this. We're talking all about the physical body, but that's just a representation of our energetic field.
Yes.
Right. So
but all the feelings.
That's what I feel.
Integration within the physical body, someone who's been traumatized, for instance, is also going to have that sitting in their field.
Yeah.
And that requires integration as well. Or at least from the view that I experience.
Yeah, so here's a possibility. If somebody, you know, has trauma in their body and they don't want to touch it, there is this possibility of doing the anthropomorphization of putting, you know, if this sensation were to show up as a cartoon character, how would it look? Who would it be? Or if you put your body out in front of you and you were to just look at it, where would that event be in your body? Or where would that thought be in your body? So they don't still have to be in it, but they can look at it and go, oh, I can see it. It's in the lower back. Are we getting anywhere? I don't know. We're just playing. We're just meeting the moment and honoring every step of the way.
So you could actually say in or around your body. Where do you feel this? In or around your body?
Yeah. Yeah. See where it takes you. Yeah. Yeah.
I just have had a question to clarify the example that you used. You know, so what does your what did the inner child mean?
Mm-hmm.
Who's sick? She needs to feel love, and so you respond by saying, okay, so feel that. So I just wanted to clarify. You're asking the person you're working with to feel that the inner child needs love, not love itself, but that the need, the need for love.
Exactly,
because
that's what's showing up in the moment. I'm not premature leaping into fixing and giving the love.
Right.
I am meeting the moment in its total purity as it was revealed, the little child saying, I need love, and that's all we have to do. And as she meets and feels that, the next step will be revealed. So then I might say something like, as you feel this, I'll give them a few moments, what do you notice now?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it's just right back into, what do you feel now?
Mm-hmm. And then with the I see light, and then if you said, well, feel that, if the person was really, you know, up here and they said, well, I can't feel it, but I can see it, then where would you go?
Great. I might say, you know, when I feel into this light, I feel a sense of expansion and my body actually feels lighter. Do you feel that? So I might be, you know, I'm in the resonant field, which is another question that was asked about. And I'm offering an invitation, not to try and fix, but because as I feel into this, this is what I experience. Is that the case for you? And they might say yes, and they might say no. As I might say, as you experience the light, is there an emotion that arises?
Okay.
And if they say not sure, I might fish a little and say, you know, as I feel into this light, there's a sense of levity and joyfulness that seems to arise. And they might say yes, and they might not.
Okay.
So part of it is, especially if there's dissociation, it's just very gently trying this door, and this door, to just see if they want to accept the invitation to come back into their body, and it may happen and it may not. That's a great question.
Yes.
Yes. And
the light, if there's a feeling of joyousness and expansion, then you ask, where do you feel it?
It's true, and actually that is a really excellent tool to help one embody, to pick very positive emotions, or, you know, that are personal for the individual. In other words, they're familiar with them, and they experience them. For example, have you ever experienced joy? Yes. And how do you know it's joy versus sadness? Because of how it feels. Okay, so let's just, for a moment, try on joy. Maybe think of someone you love, or a flower that you love, or a scene in nature, or an activity you really enjoy doing. There you are. You tell me when you're in joy. And then, how does that feel? And I might not even start, you know, if I want to start dropping hints or fishing, I might say, do you feel big or small? Because joy is an expansive. You know, I might just try and very gently feed, but it's just very gentle. Mm-hmm.
That's actually giving a hint.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just providing an option, but actually a few choices.
It's true, and often I'll say, you know, does it feel expansive? Not that it has to. You know, I'll really try and qualify everything I say so that I'm really empowering them. There's no right answer, you know, that it's... Whatever is here is perfect.
Right, but I can see where that would be helpful, because sometimes for some people, if they haven't worked a lot with emotions, they can't even find necessarily the words to put to it or to describe
exactly.
It. So they might be able to identify it, but it's sort of not, you know, presenting itself in their awareness.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Okay.
It could be construed as leading, so we just want to be careful. We just want to be careful. I mean, my preference would be to not fish. But if somebody is having difficulty being embodied, feeling sensation in their bodies, and they've made the request to you for wholeness and wellness, then very gently... with them setting the pace, I would engage in some fishing. What happens when there's lots of resistance? You guys, I really, really love the questions you've come up with. It just so communicates the years of your practice, you know? These are just such beautiful questions. Resistance is an inner resource. Resistance is an inner resource. It's a safety mechanism that they have set up. So don't push against resistance. It's their place of safety. No, I think it's just better for you to recognize it as an inner resource.
Okay. Would you come around?
We don't want to, you know, perpetuate it. We don't want to support it. Eventually, there's an invitation to open to life and welcome what's here. But I think it's important for us to see that it's an inner resource and it's serving them.
Yeah.
It's creating safety for them. And it's absolutely welcome here.
And if the client didn't want to wear down that resistance,
they'll probably stop coming to see you.
Yeah. I think of it more from the perspective of the client. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I have resistance and I go to get some help, I want to wear down the resistance and see
what's
on the other side.
Exactly. But the thing is that the client dictates the pace. I do have clients that I have seen repeatedly, you know, over whether it's a series of visits or they come and they go, you know, as life's challenges come, they come back. And there's a certain quality of honesty that's opened up in the relationship. And I might say, this feels like resistance to me. Does it feel like resistance to you?
Again.
You know, just to name it. Just to name it. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's good. But we're naming it. But resistance is welcome. And, you know, resistance is fear. Who hasn't felt afraid? So I don't ask for much when resistance shows up, but other than feel that.
Things typically end then with the resistance, or?
There's been a few clients where, yeah, it's what walked in the door and it's what walks out the door.
Well, even
yeah.
In the session, I mean,
yeah.
You know, so then what?
You know, every it's just an unfolding moment. The bottom line is resistance is welcome. And is that mine or theirs? Maybe it's mine, you know, and I'm going to meet it in me too,
mm-hmm.
and unpack it. Even if it started being theirs, and I'm resonating with it, and it ends up being mine,
mm-hmm.
now it's my work.
Mm-hmm.
But
how would you unpack resistance?
Personally, I would just feel it.
Feel it.
Feel it. Maybe have a conversation with it. What do you need? What do you want? Is there something you're here to tell me?
But it's progress because, you know, it's like a problem, something to get around or to get over. So you've had some progress by getting to it and finding it.
Yeah.
Knowing that it's there.
Yeah. And I might be more inclined to use the word, instead of progress, which, you know.
Okay.
I might
yeah.
be more inclined to say it's integrated. It's more whole. Because it's more, it's welcomed. Versus refused.
Mm.
It's welcomed. It's a part of ourselves that we're splitting off from to some degree, and we're just turning our awareness in and maybe even just saying hello, and that's the best we can do in the moment. Yes, progress. Yes, wholeness. More wholeness.
You know, I'm thinking about that big mind process that John from University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Gustafson.
Gustafson. Mm-hmm. That's about all these things being voices, our inner voices that are speaking to us, and the process of asking permission. Resistance,
mm-hmm.
you know, voice of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have permission to speak to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or
mm-hmm.
the controller.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Do I have permission to speak to you? What's your job? What are you trying
yeah.
to say?
I really honor
say
you. I'd
me?
Love to hear what you
yeah.
have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That whole, just that whole permission. You know, do
mm-hmm.
I have permission?
Mm-hmm.
Which is really what we're establishing in the dyad relationship,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? You know, do I have permission to sit
mm-hmm.
here with you?
Yeah, yeah. Just as we might ask to speak to the inner child, we can ask to speak to the voice of resistance.
Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you would encourage the client to ask that question of the part of himself that's resistant or controlling, or
if you're giving permission to yourself to do that, it just, you know, it's so it's not like, you know, Anne or your therapist or whoever it is that's, you know, trying to get you to do anything. You know, it all happens from what you're willing to do, what you're giving yourself permission.
But in the context of this conversation, it might be more the facilitator that's saying, would it be possible in this moment to have a conversation with the voice of resistance, given that, you know, it's been named already?
Yeah, and then the client answers yes, presumably, and learns more about it.
Exactly.
Releases it somehow by...
Mm-hmm. Giving it voice.
It. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And if the client says no?
Absolute respect.
Where do you go from there?
What's happening now? The moment always reveals. It's like your safeguard.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening now? It just brings us right back to the moment. And if they go, I don't know. What are you feeling in your body? Nothing. Are there any thoughts or images or memories rolling through? What was your intention in coming here today? Are there ways to make group deliveries more like dyad, more dyad-like? That's such a great question.
Oh, I have the inverse question. How can we make dyads seem more like group high rest?
Okay, well, we can go there too. Excuse me. So when I'm leading a group, I will say we're moving through the Manomaya Kosha, the sheath of emotions, and I will introduce it by saying something like, and this is in your notes, by the way, so you don't have to write this down. Feel into the body and notice if there's any part of the body that wants to speak to you right now. That's any part of the body that's calling your attention. Pause. As you meet this part of the body, notice what you're feeling. Notice any sensations, textures, colors, any images that might pop to mind. If you like, ask this part of your body if it has anything to tell you. And just wait, feel. It's like a feeling question, not a thinking question. You're feeling right into that place in the body, and you're feeling the question, is there something you want me to know? And then just wait and take the first thing that pops into awareness. Pause. As you receive the answer, notice the impact on the body-mind as you really feel that answer. So it's like I'm having a one-on-one conversation with each body. It's my son. Called him from the phone. Does that answer the question? That one question? Okay. So say it again, you want the inverse.
Well, I feel so comfortable with eye rest and so relatively uncomfortable with an eye rest diet.
Yeah. Where do you feel that?
In a discomfort place.
So where your hands are?
No, I don't have an answer, and that's the very that would happen. That would be my answer in very often in a dyad. Something like Carolyn, I can't say where. And the question so often is, where do you feel that in your body?
Here's a possibility for you. When I was the first time I taught a class, an asana class with Richard. We were at Jasper, at the first retreat up in Jasper, and I was asking him, how would I incorporate Ashtanga yoga into body sensing, because that's what I was teaching at the time. And his answer was, well, you come and teach the class in Ashtanga yoga, and I'll show you how to teach body sensing through Ashtanga yoga. And I said, oh, Richard, you know, there's who's who of you guys in that room. I was scared. I was
sure.
Really scared. And he said, Anne, there is no other. There's nobody else. Any fears you have are fears of your own. Any judgments that you think others are making upon you are your own judgments of yourself. It was like this unbelievable opening for me in that moment, where any time I sat with another and I thought, oh God, they think I'm a loser, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with what's over there, whether it's one person or 50 people. It's just showing me where my self-judgments are. there's nobody else in the room. In the lying down group meditation, you get to lose yourself. On the one-on-one, you gotta show up. Or not, I guess. I guess you don't. There's nobody else sitting across from you.
Sorry, just one quick question. Kind of relates to the group. So, how do you know then in a group class whether or not people really have a felt sense of an inner resource?
You don't.
Yeah.
And you won't. And I always give it as homework.
Yeah, because I do too, and I have been. But I guess, yeah, that's just kind of like, okay, you know, I haven't merged into anything like too major, but I guess it's sort of just a, you know, you want to, or my intent, of course, is always to create like a nice safe container for everybody, and and so, you know, just I was just wondering if there was any way that I wasn't aware of, you know, kind of trying to ensure things that you could look for to kind of get a sense of that in a group.
I guess if you have small numbers, you can check in with everybody.
Okay.
Or you could make an invitation at the end of the class, you know, if you don't feel like you've really landed in that sense of calm and ease, or even just okayness, and I always say that.
Do you use the word safety and security?
Sometimes. I do throw them in there because they're important for people that can find them. They just make such a big difference for people that can. But I use other options so that people that can't find them know that just okay or just alive is enough. Is an inner resource.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. Thank you.
But I didn't in the traditional yoga nidra, the inner resource wasn't part of the package. It's only an eye rest, and so, you know, it took me a long time to really settle into using it, but now it's an absolute essential piece. I spend quite a bit of time in the first class really building it, helping the students build it, because I can't tell you the number of times after class people have come up to me and said, wow, you know, I have a problem with anxiety, and I'm so glad you introduced the inner resource, because I started feeling anxiety and I was really able to get into the inner resource or something like that.
So when you say you spend a lot of time building that, do you mean within the protocol in 15 minutes?
Yep. Yeah. And I explain why we put it in and how one might use it. And I give all sorts of different examples of how, where, when one might go to the inner resource. The mind wants to know. It's its job. And for many, especially those traumatized, they're hypervigilant and they're hanging on every word. Or good boys and girls are trying to get it right. And they're going to be able to let it go and drop into the fullness of the practice if the mind has a sense of knowing and understanding. So it's a fine dance, but I might give too much information on the first night, because I really want to address the mind the first day, whatever, that first session.
What examples do you use to entice people into the value of the inner resource?
Well, I often say you could do the inner resource as an entire practice. Spend 1 hour in these feelings of ease, calm, safety, security, okayness, nothing's wrong. It's profoundly soothing for the nervous system. It can undo decades of arousal, nervous arousal. It's a very, very potent practice.
So may I interrupt? So you would do that, or one, you could invite that, but then without that exploration of opposites, but just kind of stewing in that.
Yep. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yes, and I do that a lot with private clients. I don't do opposites. I don't use opposites a lot, I've got to say. It
uh-huh.
feels like an imposition for me.
Uh-huh.
Unless they spontaneously arise,
yeah.
I will not do opposites.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody who's depressed, for example,
mm-hmm.
I will cultivate the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I will help them swim in the Anandamaya Kosha. Because their nervous system has gotten into an emotional groove, so to speak. We call them vasanas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been hardwired into this low grade of emotion. And so it creates new wiring, new hookups
mm-hmm.
to help run Ananda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something you said in your question about how to use, when to use the.
Yeah, what are the examples that you offer about
for the inner resource?
For the value of the. Yeah,
yeah so it could be something that once we get the inner resource established, then we can use it in the process of desensitization. We can use it in the process of working through phobias. As soon as the inner resource is established, it becomes one of our primary tools in creating wellness. You know, many people in the world that I see at the clinic that I work at, the medical clinic, who get referred to me because they're in chronic stress. Their whole body mind is just wired for stress. By establishing the inner resource, we can bring it in. Actually, even Richard has said now, he is using the inner resource through every kosha.
Mm-hmm.
Set it at the beginning, do the Anamaya kosha, inner resource.
As well being.
Pranamaya kosha, inner resource, as well being. He sees it as so important. He just pulls it in as much as he can. We've lived through generation after generation after generation of wars, abuse, trauma. It's in the collective unconscious. The inner resource cannot be underestimated.
So in that sense, the inner resource is pure being. You know, it's a
gradation. Yes.
So that well-being, integrating the inner resource is the same thing as us integrating awareness
exactly.
into each kosha.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as we really establish the inner resource, we will be able to find pure being. The two are connected.
What feels really important to me that you've offered today is it's enough to be okay. We
mm-hmm.
don't have
yeah.
to go for joy or peace or calm even, that if nothing's wrong pulling you away. Thank you.
And I think it's really important to mention at the outset, whether you're working with an individual or a group, because if we use language of safety, security, bliss, joy, you know, and somebody can't even, you know, put a finger on it, we might lose them. They might not come back.
And that's happened
mm-hmm.
for me.
Yeah,
you know,
probably for all of us, whether
yeah.
we know it or not.
And so there are people, and probably many, who can feel and state they've never experienced safety in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, we're asking them to create
mm-hmm.
something they don't even know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So okay feels like you showed up here in class.
And for some, it might not even be okay, Cindy. It might be simply nothing's wrong.
Right, that's what I'm taking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Okay, final question before we move on, and then we'll take a bathroom break and shift.
You know, that's profound.
It's profound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That nothing's wrong.
Nothing's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That soothes the dread or the anxiety,
yeah.
by the way.
Yeah, everybody can get that, has some memory, some moment where nothing's wrong. You know, even if it's just the bathroom door is locked, I'm sitting on the toilet, and there's that, as the bowels release or as the pelvic floor releases. So for somebody, that might be their best moment, you know?
And I'm just thinking that attachment of the ego, that next thing, which is that there's nothing wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which just comes right in there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That would be a nice riff to play on in a class.
And so then on that note, because I actually had that experience just recently where when one of the students said that she was actually having, it was easier for her to identify with the more negative, you know, what we would label the more negative emotions, you know, sadness versus joy.
Mm-hmm.
So then this, you know, it came to the realization, okay, well then it's really important to weave in other things other than just joy, right? So, because joy seems like up here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a high arousal, positive emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, peace and calm at least, or relaxation is a little bit, if you haven't, right, tapped into the safety and security, right? So when you're doing the Anandamaya Kosha, is it appropriate then to weave in some other words other than joy?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. And in some way, shape, or form, something like, or however that is for you. Okay, so one more question and then we'll move quickly.
Into the timeless.
Okay, well, yeah, we're in the timeless. Could we get a better sense of resonance? I just love this question. And I think that the essential answer I want to give you is, as I started, there is no other. Resonance is happening. It's already right here. Now, it's just a matter of the mind believing it. And the more you turn your mind to it, the more you'll feel it. If you just cop out and go, I can't do this, I'm not feeling anything, you won't. If you keep listening, feeling, sensing as a practice, meeting your client, what's here, and trusting, or something new shows up, your stomach starts gurgling, and your mind might go, oh, I'm just hungry, I just need lunch. You could check it out with your client. Are you feeling anything in your stomach? Always check it out with your client. Don't make the assumption. For example, I had a client the other day who's a principal at a school, and she was describing her work, and the longer she described her work, I felt this incredible grip in my belly, and like this, it's like every employee she mentioned, every student she cared about, I could feel like these energy hooks, and she's just, this was the impression I was getting, was that she was carrying all of them, all of her employees, and maybe not all the students, but specific students, she's carrying them, she's holding them, she doesn't leave them at work, she brings them home with her. So I said, you know, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm getting this incredible grip in my stomach, and the impression that you're not leaving your work at work you're taking your employees and your students home with you. And she said, oh yeah, it's so true. I really do. And that turned the direction. Number one, into the feeling in the stomach. What are you feeling in your stomach right now as you talk about the work? And that's was what the moment revealed. The moment affirmed it. And she didn't get the impressions. I got the impressions. I shared them. She affirmed it's true. And by me giving it a voice, it helped her get clear. Yes. Oh my God, do I ever take my students home? I knew I took my staff home, but you know, I do take my students home. So if impressions like these come, speak them or not. Does it feel right? Does it not? Let the moment determine it. But I clearly do not say, you take care of your students. You don't leave them at work. You take them home with you, don't you?